Today in the show, we have Broadridge integrating JPM Coin for settlement, Mav Exploiters getting the DOJ treatment, the Lens Protocol launching its own chain with ZK Sync, and so much more. I'm your host, Mauricio Magaldi, and this is BlockRops, your weekly digest on blockchain for business.
These news are not a form of endorsement, sponsorship, or encouragement for consumption, and are meant for educational purposes only.
The first drop today, we're talking about JP Morgan, and not because Jamie Dimon is dissing Bitcoin. JP Morgan has been doing a lot in what we call the DLT space, the decentralized ledger technologies, with the help of Quorum, a fork from Ethereum they have been managing, I think, since 2019. And this week, they announced that not only they're opening up for third-party applications to build on it, but they announced the first partnership in that program with the addition of Broadridge's DLR. It's a distributed ledger repo platform. Repo is also the product that JPM Coin settles trillions of dollars every day, so no surprise that they're starting with the same. The DLR platform is using Onyx's JPM Coin to do intraday and overnight repo settlement, meaning that JPM Coin is the actual settlement mechanism in which these deals are going to be settled. This is a first partnership for the third-party company or third-party application using JPM Coin, and the first one that will break the walls of JP Morgan in that regard. They'll start operating in June. According to the release, JP Morgan says that cash on-chain solutions are rare in the industry and that JPM Coin could act as a framework for this and other types of cash settlement solutions for other digital platforms, which means that they can offer this across the board. JPM Coin is prominently a USD-based tokenized deposits. We're seeing tokenized deposits emerge a lot in the regulatory space, be it as a second layer on wholesale CBDCs implementations, such as the one in Brazil with Drax and the one in Hong Kong. So it's not surprising. It's also not surprising that this is becoming JP Morgan's core offering, because they've been doing a lot in those, in that space, both with the BIS and the Monetary Authority of Singapore. We covered Project Guardian here a couple of times. That's the core of what they're doing there, albeit not with JPM Coin, but involved as part of the wider tokenization process. And obviously, it's interesting to see that a quote-unquote permissioned chain is now reaching out into the world. So this is a trend that we might need to pay attention to, because the regulators like that. The regulators like to have what we call a throat to choke, and JP Morgan is a very well recognized throat in that regard. So it's interesting to see they're reaching out with that infrastructure. According to Nelly Zaltzman, who's the head of the platform settlement solutions for Onyx in JP Morgan, and I quote, "We are delighted to launch our synchronized settlement solution using JPM Coin. Through our work with Broadridge at Onyx, we look to be the foremost provider of cash on-chain solutions to existing and steadily growing digital asset platforms globally," end quote. I mean, that's not a surprise. I like seeing this. I hope that this is a step in the right direction. It's not exactly a decentralized solution, because it's running on JPM servers and being validated by JPM validators. And it's, by and large, they use a blockchain just as a part of the overall infrastructure, but it's not at all connected to what we would call a public infrastructure, which is what we see in DeFi, decentralized finance. But it is a step towards that. So if there is any interoperability between the JPM Coin Quorum solution and other blockchains, probably EVM based or compatible, we might see a lot of influx between this large scale, quote-unquote, more centralized solutions and the open waters of public chains. Very curious second drop today, where we're going to cover the arrest and prosecution of two brothers that exploited a software in the Ethereum blockchain to operate a 12-second exploit and steal 25 millions worth of different cryptocurrencies this week. They are both Anton and James Prairie Bueno out of New York, and they are being charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. This is a first of its kind, action from the DOJ, the Department of Justice of the U.S., targeting the MEV practice. MEV is M-E-V, and it's short for Maximum Extractable Value. And we're going to get a little bit technical here. MEV is the ability of a validator that has been chosen to write a block in the blockchain of learning what are the transactions that have been posted into a staging area called the mempool and deciding which transactions that validator will write to the chain and in what order. Because they do that, it is possible for people that can see the mempool to pay higher fees to incentivize the validators to put their transactions at the top of the execution pile and then performing what people call the front run. Their front running means that they can have their transactions running ahead of the other transactions in a block and therefore extracting more value from transactions when the block is written, and then that triggers actions from smart contracts that are waiting to see what these transactions are. In this particular case, they exploited a application called the MEV Boost, and they manipulated the data that was presented to validators so that the validators saw the data and thought that they should order the transactions for a particular operations, and these are all financial DeFi operations. And they chose to order the transactions in such a way, but what ended up on the chain was completely different. So whoever has been exploited or attacked by this exploit ended up with less liquid cryptocurrencies in their transactions than they otherwise would, and the attackers ended up walking away with what would be $25 million worth of different stable coins, including DAI from the MakerDAO and USDC from Circle. So yes, MEV is a standing practice in this type of architecture, but manipulating the data that these validators use to order the transactions, well, that's where they actually cross the line, and that's why they are being prosecuted by the Department of Justice in all those accounts. So the document that was made public this week says the following here, I quote, "In effect, the victim traders sold approximately 25 million of various stable coins or other more liquid cryptocurrencies to purchase particular illiquid cryptocurrencies. In effect, the tamper transactions drained the particular liquidity pools of all the cryptocurrency that the victim traders had deposited based on their front-run trades," end quote. That means that all of the transactions that the brothers were able to write to the blockchain were hurting other traders while drawing the liquidity to their transactions in replacement. So this is pretty wild. It doesn't mean that all of the MEV are being exploited, but the fact that they were able to pull this off in 12 seconds in that amount of money will certainly raise some eyebrows. So definitely something to be aware of if you're doing DeFi, especially at high amounts in blockchains that allow for MEV, and pay attention to that. So absolutely something to be aware. This is not at all dissimilar to what TradFi does, which is high-frequency trading. And in TradFi, traders even hire infrastructure that sits closer to the stock exchange, so they have a better, smaller latency, so they can operate in front of and front run other trades. So this is something that is not unheard of, but the way that this operated obviously crossed a very serious line. In the final drop today, we're covering the recent announcement by Lens Protocol. They're now launching Lens Network on Ethereum. Yes, they're launching a layer 2 that will be dedicated to Web3 social networks. The goal, according to the announcement, is that there is a place on Web3 that will be affordable, scalable, and it will be allowing the same degree of data ownership that the original Lens protocol offered for users and for builders. And they are building this using the ZK Sync stack in a project that has 3 stages and will leverage different data availability architectures, including rollups, including Validium, and including Volition, which are 3 different data architectures. So first, they're going with Validium, which is a data availability that is somewhat centralized. Then they will evolve that into a Volition, where the data availability layer is further decentralized. And then the third stage is where the ZK rollup will kick in and will allow for rollup or of the financial transactions, not only just the data. They're dividing this into 3 stages. The first stage is the seed stage, where the Validium architecture will batch the transactions, will produce a zero knowledge proof of all the state changes, and that will be written on Ethereum. So this is a type of rollup where you get all of the data that has been posted in a particular block, and you write that as a zero knowledge proof, meaning you compact all of that data and then write that into the main chain. The second stage, they'll get the Validium chains in that first stage, and they will open the Validium chain to use a data availability provider to guarantee data state security, meaning that a good number of participants will be made available, and they will manage the cryptography and the data storage in a decentralized manner across an assortment of data providers. They call this the DAC. It's the Data Availability Committee, and it will serve both for public available social data, financial data, and also what they call a private social data. Then this is a very interesting development because this is the use of privacy-preserving technology like ZK rollups to allow for the data that you don't want to make public be private. In the third stage, they call the Bloom stage, where a ZK rollup is added, so any financial transactions that are performed as part of the social interaction will be then rolled up directly into the Ethereum data availability service, and that makes it safer. That gets a separation between the social data and the financial data, and it rolls directly into Ethereum as a separate architecture, albeit integrated with the ZK Sync stack. Pretty interesting approach to some of this, and obviously this is, in my mind, social networking in Web3 is supposed to be the most compelling use case for individuals because of data ownership and data sovereignty. Obviously, with the lack of data privacy on chain, some of this is not yet attainable, and also the UX is not at all great. But with this type of infrastructure, the costs of operating a social network should be much lower, which will then help with the overarching UX. So you have better UX. If you have better UX, you have better cost, you have more adoption. So I think this is the right play for Lens, because Lens was running as a protocol on top of Polygon, but now bringing their own blockchain with their very specific architecture for social networks, still integrated with layer 2s and layer 1s in Ethereum, makes a lot of sense. Let's see how that evolves. In a week back full of news, here's more. Moneybrain got its VASP license in the Jersey, British Isles. Project Liberty is moving to acquire TikTok in the US and will leverage decentralized social networks. A new report by the European Blockchain Association covers execution and consensus in staking services. Georgetown Law Professor Chris Bremer is launching his new startup called Blueprint that will tackle crypto regulatory disclosures. Brazilian surfer Sunny Pires is the first in the country to get crypto sponsorship, and it's from NounsDAO. The American Banker magazine announced their top innovators for 2024, with crypto and AI taking front row seats. The winner will be announced in June, and I have a friend in the running, Kai Sheffield, the head of crypto at Visa. MasterCard picked 5 new startups for their Start Path program: Kulipa, Peak, Triangle, Venly, and the Brazilian innovators Parfin. BRX Finance is partnering with V360 to manage tokenized purchase receipts. Dolce & Gabbana is undergoing a lawsuit for undelivered promises on their NFT collection. And if you missed my very exciting Twitter space with Diane from NIM talking about Midnight, the link is also in the description. Catch us online. We're on Instagram at BlockDrops Podcast, on Twitter at BlockDrops Pod or Xerox Mauricio. We're on Lens at BlockDrops.Lens. We have a newsletter on LinkedIn. Write to us at BlockDropsPodcast@gmail.com. And you can listen to the BlockDrops Podcast at Spotify, iColab, Febrebun Tech, and all of the other major streaming platforms. Yay! Shoutouts today to the people who share the links you will find in the episode notes: Victoria Thompson, Horacio Barakat, Nader Dabit, Dante Disparte, Tomica Tilleman, Eugenio Reggianini, Hudson James, Chris Brummer, Simon Taylor, Luis Lamin, Kai Sheffield, Mariana Braoyo, João Zequim, Bosco Bellinghausen, and Diane Montserrat. Don't forget to leave the ratings on your favorite player. This is all for today. Stay rare, stay weird. LFG.